This is Inside the Magic Studio with your host, Robert Martin, the interview podcast, the best in Magic the Gathering. I'd like to thank GatheringMagic.com, where you get this show and some of the best articles in Magic, along with Cool Stuff, Inc. Our guest this show, Caleb Durward.
How did you become a writer for Challenger Fireball?
That's a long story, but I'll try and keep it short. When I was in high school, I liked to read gaming magazines, and it always seemed like the reviewers were just having an absolute blast. And most of them had English or writing majors, and that's one of the reasons I got my degree. After that, I moved in with some friends in Chicago, and I went looking for some entry-level editing positions, still thinking that there was a magazine industry or something, but there wasn't. After a few months, I had burned through my cash buffer, and I found myself grinding trades in small local tournaments to stem the bleeding, you know? And I had a few plays produced, but that even paid less than Magic. That was about the time that I top four GP Columbus, and there was a tremendous amount of hype around this crazy blue-green deck with Aquamoebas, Vengevines, and Survivals that I top four with, and I knew that I could sell a tournament report to anyone that I wanted to, and I chose Channel because I had a large respect for LSV, and since I was so poor at the time, I appreciated that they didn't charge for premium.
Did you get to know Luis before you wanted to be a writer for Channel Fireball?
Absolutely not. I saw him a bit at GP Columbus, but that was mostly him like watching my matches. Like, he knew Matt Sperling, so he was watching me play Sperling and that sort of thing. I didn't really know him at all, no. I got to know him a bit more when he was my editor, like over the years that I've been with Channel Fireball.
Who do you work with when you test?
I've worked with a lot of friends and still do. Usually when I go on a road trip, there's like the last minute testing that the car does, but I do most of my testing by myself or with my roommate, Jeremy Stowe.
Do you do a lot of Modo testing, or do you actually do paper card testing?
When I'm testing with people, I prefer paper card testing. Like, we have tons of proxy decks. If you'd ever come to my place, we have rows of proxy decks on this shelf. And every once in a while, we go through and we clear out the ones that are obsolete and make new ones and so forth. When I'm testing by myself, sometimes I use Modo, but usually I'd rather be testing specific matchups. So I go on Magic Workstation and I play myself, and it doesn't matter that I have perfect information or anything, because I'm not like trying to figure out, like if someone would bluff in a certain situation or not. I'm just data mining. I'm seeing what deck is better positioned in what metagame, and figuring out what makes good sideboard cards, what's highly impactful and what isn't.
When you go back and look through some of the old proxy decks that you get rid of, are there any one of those that go, wow, what were we thinking?
Oh, there's always some of those. Like, I'm constantly brewing, so usually for every good deck that I make, there's at least 10 that I throw away.
You have an impressive amount of quality returns on the SCG Open Series. What is it about those events that work so well for you?
I've always done well in cash tournaments. It's just that the Open Series puts a face up where other people can follow along and go, oh, hey, that guy is doing well. I've always loved tinkering with Legacy, and you need to play Standard if you want to be a profitable grinder. The Opens have the perfect coupling of the two formats. The one that I have to play for grinding, and then the one that I love to tinker with on the side. So, like I've won a Legacy Open and a Standard Open. I've done well at the Invitationals, which are both formats. It plays to my strengths.
We talked about innovation before, and it seems to be your calling card, regardless of format. Is there any format that you don't like to experiment with?
No. When I'm just learning a new format, I don't like to experiment as much because I don't know what I'm doing. That would be like, I don't know, a fighter jet pilot jumping in a 747 and trying to do like air cartwheels or whatever fighter jets do. Anyway, when I'm learning a new format, I'll take the established decks and I'll play with them. And then once I am familiar with the format, I'll pretty much experiment all the time.
A lot of players tend to stay with decks in Legacy that they feel comfortable with, but you're always changing your decks. Why?
Well, the metagame is changing. It's rare that the perfect deck for two tournaments is the same deck, and I'm, of course, especially eager to switch it up if I do poorly. It might have something to do with when I'm playing a fresh deck, I'm trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And since I'm learning new things, my brain is more active than it would be otherwise. And I think I play better, but maybe it's just because I have more fun that way.
When it seems to come to the invitationals, it seems like a certain staple of people just tend to stay with the same safe decks. Is it just because they're playing percentages?
Why do you think those people play the same decks over and over?
Yes.
Well, if you're experienced in the Esper Blade Mirror and you're going to be playing in the Star City Invitational and you know that you're going to be playing Esper Blade every other round, there's no reason to not play Esper Blade if you think that's what you're going to be able to outplay those people with. I would rather play a deck that I think is favored against Esper Blade and just have a win every other round, but sometimes that doesn't work out too, so.
Sponsors' exemptions for the Pro Tour events have been questioned, and you've benefited from these. Your opinion on them?
I mean, they need something to fill the void that the Planeswalker points and ELO rating invites left behind. The main thing I'd change is to add a few more slots, maybe up it to 8 or 10. I've heard some people suggest a point system, something like the QP system on Moto, and that would make sense too. I don't really care so much about the system so long as something is there to reward strong players who perform well but don't quite get there on in the one-slotters. Like, having people only able to qualify through winning a PTQ or top fouring a GP is pretty insane. So I'm glad that there's at least something there to catch people that slide through the cracks.
A follow-up question on that. Your thoughts on people who believe you shouldn't have got them?
I mean, some of those people have valid reasons, and others don't, and I don't want to lump them in together. Obviously, haters should be ignored. The best point I've heard is that it's hard for PTQ grinders to know how close they are to receiving a sponsor's invite, and that was one of the benefits to the ELO and Planeswalker Point systems, that people always knew exactly where they stood. On the other hand, I'm sure Wizards enjoys the level of control the current invite system gives them. They choose the number of invites and who gets them, and I suppose there are worse people to decide who gets Pro Tour invites than the people running the Pro Tour. I mean, it's their tournament. If more Magic players played chess, this system would seem less strange to them. I was watching the World Championship series where they get a new World Champion challenger, and it's just an 8-person tournament, but one of those people was a sponsor's invite, which was pretty crazy to me. If we did that in Magic, people might be throwing fits.
What does playing on the Pro Tour mean to you?
I mean, it's a variety of things. I usually perform very averagely on the Pro Tour, so it's not really about money yet. Time that I spend PTQing would probably be better spent grinding Moto or something if I'm just, like, trying to get money. On the other hand, I feel it's a part of my job. It gives me something to write about. I've had a few deck techs on the Pro Tour, and maybe people that see them and like my decks go and check out my column. It's all related.
Speaking of that, I watched your Pro Tour Dark Ascension deck tech about Hippo Blade. You seem very comfortable on camera. Is commentary something you'd like to do down the line?
Definitely. I have a good knowledge of competitive Magic. I know most of the players, and I can fill dead air if I need to. I've actually done commentary before, back when TCG Players was trying it out. It was only one day, and there were problems with the stream, but I did enjoy myself a lot. I remember one moment there was a problem with a complex game state, and I saw it, and I stopped the game, and I had them fix it, and a different player ended up winning the whole tournament because I was there commentating and engaging with the game.
Issues lately with Magic as far as play sequence due to the rule changes and stuff like that, how much does those kind of things bother you as a player?
Oh, it doesn't bother me. I mean, the rules will always change. Like, the cards will change, the game will change. Just like the ratings system keeps changing. I never really see much reason to complain about that sort of thing. As so much as just be like, okay, well, this is how the game's different. I guess I'll adapt to that now. That seems like a better use of energy to me.
You went back-to-back top 8 GPs. I'd like you to talk about some of the memorable moments from both those weekends for you.
Most of top 8ing a GP is just picking a good deck, playing it well, and then turning in the results slips. It's like any other tournament with a lot more rounds, which I like, because newer players get tired at the end of it and can play poorly, which favors the veterans. If I had it my way, there wouldn't be any sleep in between the 2 days. We'd just play one giant event, and the end of the tournament would just be like incredibly tired, exhausted players, almost like pushing each other over at the end of a boxing match. But anyway, that all said, I had one sweet game against Tom Martell in that Legacy GP. I mulled on the play and kept a hand of Nimble Mongoose, Fetchland, Wasteland, Force of Will, Brainstorm, Brainstorm, which isn't a bad hand. And I went turn one Nimble Mongoose, which he forced, and I forced back. On his turn, Tom fetched out a basic Swamp and Thoughtseized me, taking my Brainstorm. So untapping for my turn two, I had a Trop and a Nimble Mongoose in play, a single Wasteland in hand, and nothing else. It was just these three cards. And my opponent had a basic land, which made the Wasteland dead, and a grip full of Stoneforge Mystics. But I ripped Brainstorm, and I thought pretty hard before cashing it in to transform the dead Wasteland into a Nimble Mongoose and a second fetch. And Tom fetched out, played a Stoneforge Mystic fetching Batterskull, and then I ripped a Ponder, which I used to find a burn spell for the Stoneforge Mystic, which gave me Threshold exactly on turn three to like attack in for six. And then he played a second Stoneforge Mystic, and I attacked again, and then neither of us could attack for a little bit. And then on probably the last possible turn before he was going to equip Umezawa's Jit to his Batterskull and start hitting me, I ripped the Lightning Bolt. And at this point, he had a counterspell in hand, but he tapped low at the end of my turn for some reason, and that let me finish him off. So that was pretty exciting. A few weeks later, I heard someone say, "Oh, wasn't Tom undefeated in that Grand Prix?" And I was like, "Heck no, he wasn't. I beat that guy." I was lucky to be running Sulfur Elemental, which was actually tech for Thalia and Mother of Runes, which Drew Levin had suggested to me, but it turned out being very good against the Lingering Souls, which Tom Martell was running, which was also new tech. That's how I managed to win game three.
You talk about Drew Levin, another Legacy veteran. How much communication do you guys have in that community about different ideas?
I would say a good bit. Drew Levin is probably better friends with people like Jerry Thompson and AJ Soccer, like that group of people. And I'm probably better friends with people like Joe Bernal and more Midwesterners, Matt Hoey. However, sometimes, usually before GPs, sometimes we'll get together and talk and discuss our technology and try and figure out something. Usually if one of us is stuck, we might come to the other person.
Speaking of Matt, obviously you heard about the car accident that he had.
Oh yeah, a member of my hotel room had to go get him because he had only come up for the legacy portion, so we had someone with an empty car that could just go pick up these people that were stranded. And that's how Matt made it to his top four match.
When the guys in the room got the phone call, your first thoughts on, this is one of my friends and now he's in a car accident and he still has to get here for the top eight?
Oh, that's exciting. I mean, obviously I wasn't worried because he wouldn't be calling for a ride to go play in the tournament if he was injured or anything like that. And I was excited to see how he would do in the top four after that. And he lost, which was kind of anticlimactic, but at least he got to go play.
Outside of the friendships you develop within Magic, what is one of the other strengths of Magic?
Well, that's a vague question. I enjoy the complexity of the game. I like how the incredible amount of depth can go into winning or losing a game of Magic, down to the very last sideboard slot, or the very like most minute play decision that you didn't even consider. I've watched games of Magic and sat there and thought that I would have lost the game from either player's side, and I've watched other games where I've watched and I've been like, I would have won the game from either player's side. It's a very complicated game.
Do you enjoy watching it on camera, or do you prefer to be over-the-shoulder watching?
It depends. I would, in general, I'm much more comfortable when I'm watching the live stream at home.
Is there a particular match that you can remember that you watched on a stream that you may have saw something that other people didn't?
Like the players? I mean, that happens all the time. the people that are playing are exhausted. They've been playing Magic for 2 days straight. They might not even be playing a format that they're particularly comfortable with. And then they're put under scrutiny. Like maybe they caught some good luck with the pairings and the matchups. And so they're further in the tournament than they should be. Or I shouldn't say that. Like obviously they earned their spot to get there. And then like a lot of people are online and they're watching and they're like, oh, I wouldn't have done that. I would have remembered that Tabernacle of the Pendril Veil was in play. I've played against that card hundreds of times. But I mean, you can't really put yourself in their shoes. You don't really know what's going on in their head, what they're thinking about.
If someone has played Standard for years and hasn't dwelled in the Legacy, what kind of deck do you think they should try to start?
I mean, what kind of deck do they like playing in Standard? That's where they should start. It's not like someone who plays Control in Standard is suddenly going to have fun playing Mono Red Burn in Legacy and vice versa. You know what I mean?
We'll use your deck as example last weekend. Used a red-green aggro deck. Let's say they're comfortable playing aggro.
Sure.
What would be a good deck for a person trying to get into Legacy to try to play?
I mean, Zoo is quasi-viable. The Merfolk can always, like, apply a quick clock, and then it has enough disruption to have game against the combo decks. Goblins doesn't really care about the combo decks so much. It just runs some hate for some specific decks, and then it tries to beat all the fair decks. I would probably recommend Goblins.
What do you do for fun outside of Magic?
I play a lot of chess, some League of Legends. I read a lot. Sometimes I write. I watch a lot of movies because I used to want to be a screenwriter, and when I had that in mind, I was watching a lot of movies, and I never really stopped.
What's your favorite author?
Probably Roger Zelazny is an old science fiction writer from the golden age of science fiction. Actually, science fiction fantasy. He mixes it up a bit. I've got a few other favorites. Isaac Asimov. Abraham Davidson is a little bit more obscure, but I enjoy his writing a lot. I've been reading a lot of Heinlein recently. Another one of my favorites.
What is your favorite card all time in Magic?
I like a lot of cards for a lot of different reasons. I guess I've always had fun casting Gush. Even when I, like, draw two blanks off the top of my deck, I go from having no cards in hand to having all these cards in hand, and that's just fun to me.
The best deck you've played, regardless of its result?
I guess Blue-Green Survival was pretty good. They banned a card out of that one.
All right, I gotta ask. How does it feel to have a card banned because of something you did? Or the process of you starting it?
That was sweet. Hopefully I'll get another one someday.
It almost seems like it's a badge of honor.
I guess. I mean, Mike Long got a deck banned. Mike Long got a whole deck banned. Long.deck was a vintage... I guess they don't ban cards in vintage, but they restricted, like, Burning Wish, Lion's Eye Diamond, Mind's Desire, just the slew of cards that were all in this deck as four ofs that were like, oh, so this deck wins 60% of the time turn one through a Force of Will, you say. I guess we should ban the whole thing.
When you play better when it's cash tournaments.
Sure. To some extent, I think when you show up, if you've done your homework, you know how good your deck is, you know how good it is against the field. And so when you actually show up and you play the games out, it's kind of like filling out the paperwork. And obviously playing Tournament Magic is more fun than that, but that's kind of how it seems in my head. Like I know all the information, I'm just filling it out.
What do you want from Magic in the long run?
Well, obviously I don't want to be grinding Magic for forever, but that wouldn't be the worst thing either. Like I enjoy my life. But someday I'd like to be a game developer, I guess. It doesn't really matter what type of game to me. Obviously, I have more experience with Magic than anything else. So if I was going to jump straight into developing, that's where I would go. But I've spent a lot of time playing a lot of different tabletop games so that I can like get an idea of the mechanics of tabletop games and like what makes a good one, what makes a bad one, what I like or dislike about them, how they incorporate flavor, that sort of thing. And then maybe I could do something in that field too.
Okay, when you look over a set for Magic, do you ever look at cards as a developer would, or do you look them strictly as a player?
Well, my job right now isn't one of a developer, and maybe I should be, but right now I see myself as more of a reviewer. I'm taking the cards and I'm like trying to see where they'll fit into the metagame, and in a lot of ways, that's what a developer is doing too. They're trying to like predict the upcoming metagame and how the cards will interact with each other, how players will use them. So, similar, but not quite exactly, I guess, is my answer.
I'd like to thank Cale Doerr for coming on the show this week. One of the nice things you get when you talk to someone like Caleb is the fact that you can tell there is such a passion for the game, and yet he's always able to be analytical in his thought as well as actions. I hope one day that he will get lucky enough to be part of Wizards of the Coast in design, because I feel like his vision of what the game could be something that would be great for the game. I'd like to thank you for listening to the show this week. You can reach me at themagicstudio1@gmail.com or on Twitter under the Magic Studio. I'd like to thank Cool Stuff Inc. at GatheringMagic.com, and we'll see you next time.